Hey guys, and welcome to the Bright and Fit podcast. I'm so excited to be here. I'm your host, Tatiana, money and fitness professional and everyday energizer bunny. From health, wellness, and everyday life challenges and topics, the Bright and Fit podcast will discuss interesting and fun ways to reinvent ourselves at any age. I hope you can join me. Welcome, everyone, to the Bright and Fit podcast. This is your host, Tatiana, and this is our episode number 3. I am super excited today. I have a wonderful guest, and today we're going to talk about female in fitness and business, and we're going to talk about health style stigmas. My guest today is Amira Dillon, and I want you guys to pay super so much attention to this podcast because it is a story of resilience, it's a story of inspiration, it's a story that I feel like a lot of people will resound with it at any age and at any stage of their lives. So welcome, Amira.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. Wow, what an intro.
So the Bright and Fit podcast is obviously focused on health and wellness. And what we want to bring to our listeners is we want to let them know other people's experiences. We want to talk about specific tips and topics and funny stories so that our listeners can feel identified with us. So I wanted to start this podcast with asking you, tell me about who Amira Dillon is. Where you are from, who your family is from, what do they do? What do? How old are you? Everything else you want to add.
That is, wow. So what a broad question. So I always get super like, oh, they're going to ask me who I am. Okay. So how do you answer a question like that? How do you answer who are you? Because how do you identify? Do you identify with the job that you do? Do you identify with the people you know, that you hang out with? Do you identify with your interests or your likes or your, you know what I mean? Like, how do you describe yourself? So if you want me to just to start with the basics, hi, I'm Amira. I am 27, soon to be 28 next month. Time flies. I am you asked me where my parents are from. So my dad is from India. My mom is from New York. So I'm mixed breed or mutt, as they say.
Your mom is from where?
My mom is from New York and my dad is from India. So,
wow, that's amazing.
I'm like a hybrid kind of deal. It's funny because I don't look Indian. Everybody's like, what are you? And I'm like, well, I always ask them to guess, right? Because it's like a really funny, it's a fun game for me to guess and see what they come up with because nobody ever guesses Indian.
Right. I didn't even know that.
But see, there you go.
Your first name is different, of course. Where does it come from? What does it mean?
So Amita is an Indian name. It's a funny story because I Googled it a couple of years ago because I had no idea what it meant. And I'm like, I need to find out what this means. So it apparently it means without limits. So limitless and without limits. And just kind of like reflecting on that, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. Like I like to see my life in that way right now.
Right.
Hasn't always been that way, but.
Still in New York or where do they do? What do you do?
So I was born and raised in Florida. Rest of my family lived in New York. They moved down here and I was born. I am a health coach, a nutrition coach, a life coach. It all is really encompassed under the title of health coach because you can't really separate mental health and physical health.
Right.
Because without your mental health, like what's the point in being physically healthy? Like,
right. And you also went to UF for rec sports?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Florida. I majored in dietetics, which is the track you take. So it's nutrition. It's the track you take to be an RD, a registered dietitian. I did not end up doing that. And that's something that we can get into. But it's ultimately what led me on my path to coaching But with rec sports, so UF Rec Sports is the Department of Recreational Sports with like the gym and all the sports, intramurals, all of that. So I was a group fitness instructor at UF Rec Sports. So my specialty was cycling classes. And to this day is still a passion of mine.
That's beautiful. So right now you are a fitness coach and a fitness instructor, correct?
I am.
Good, good.
Well, let me rephrase that. I'm not a fitness coach. I'm a health coach. And I focus more on the lifestyle aspect of things rather than actual fitness programming. So you'll have your fitness coaches who will do like workout programs and all the like. But for me, I focus more on a lifestyle approach and a really more of the psychological aspects of things, because what really drives us, you know, people will come to you and they'll be like, I want to get fit, or I want to lose weight. But what's really driving that, right?
Awesome. And what does your family do? What do your siblings do?
So my siblings, my two sisters are older than me, and they are both physician assistants. So they both live in New York. They moved back to New York after they finished school. Okay. And then my dad is a doctor. He's a psychiatrist. And my mom has been a stay-at-home mom since she had my first sister. Before she met my dad, she was a travel agent. So that's just random.
That's amazing. So your dad is a doctor in Florida still?
Yes, he is. And so there's a lot of medical.
Two sisters that live in New York. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Three of you.
Yes, there's three of us.
So you're the youngest.
I'm the baby. I'm the baby.
Me too. Yes, we have that in common. So I know that, and we're going to talk about how we met in this episode, of course, but I was born and raised in Nicaragua, in Central America.
That's exotic.
And I speak about this in my first episode, about me and how I was 17 years old when I moved to the States, and I went to a university in Oklahoma, and I was trying to pursue journalism and broadcasting, which never happened.
Really?
And then that I wanted to go for, I went to a professional dancer, a ballet dance team in Oklahoma as well, and end up not going, you know, not continuing there. But so I was born and raised there. And then one day I just said, you know what, let me just move somewhere else. I knew my life was not down there. And so I moved to Florida. I actually moved there to Oklahoma, and then from Oklahoma I moved to another state, and then from there I moved to Florida in 2015. So it's roughly about 6 years that I have moved to Florida.
So what made you choose Florida?
Good question. So I mentioned earlier on the other episode that the weather in Nicaragua and Central America, you know, is tropical, and it reminds me so much of home. And how close we were to the beach, because you can go to the beach. It's a small country. So mm-hmm. You can literally be on the beach in like maybe an hour, like just like here. And I've always wanted to be either in California or New York or Florida, where there's a lot of more like mixed population. Because I feel, mm-hmm. I believe that cultural growth and fitness growth is super correlated with who you surround yourself with.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me what the first memory of me is.
The first memory of Tati? Oh, well, we were going to a cycle training, like a spin class training at Crunch. And we're all getting into the room, setting up our bikes. And of course, it's like one of those situations where it's like, you don't know anybody really. It's like a dark room. And me being the person I am, I'm always like that front and center kind of person. Like, for example, in high school, I'd be the front and center of the room with all of my highlighters and my pens in a row, all like neatly tucked. The teacher hated me. What's up?
Where did you go?
I went, where did I go?
You were ready to go.
Oh, I was ready to go. And that carried out into college too. I was always sitting in the front because, I mean, the classroom is only as big as you make it. I had to like pay attention. Whatever, I digress. So I'm going in there. I decide to just take the front row bike and I see you come behind me. But it was like one of those scattered situations where everybody's like scrambling to find a bike. And lo and behold, you sit on that bike behind me. And I don't know, how did we start talking? You had this presence to you though. You had this energy, like this, this like fun energy to you. And you, when you're in tune with energy, like you can really feel somebody's energy just being close to them. You don't even have to say a word to them. You can just feel it.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that's one of the things that kind of like we gravitated towards each other, because we're both very bubbly. We're both very curious. We're both very, but also very focused on what we're doing. It's like, okay, all right, let's talk. But it's time to start. Okay, it's time to start. I'm going to shut up now. Do my thing. So when you were there and I introduced myself to you and to everyone, as I will normally do, because I just am a social butterfly.
What? You really? What?
Yes, please, surprising. So when I went to you and you told me your name, you said, oh, my name is Amita. Like, you say like, what was the name? You compare with something. I was like,
Okay. So when I introduce myself, I say, hi, my name is Amita. It rhymes with fajita. That way you don't forget it. I always get a smile.
Amita. Okay. But at the time you didn't know where I was from. And you know, I'm used to like different names and different cultures. And I think it's different for me. It's, I don't have that. I just can't pronounce your name, honey. I'm just going to call you Sarah.
Or just might as well just call me Karen.
Oh, right, exactly. So how do you start your fitness journey?
Wow. Okay, so my fitness journey has been pretty much ongoing for quite a while. So I want to say my whole journey started when I was 13, and that was the very bare beginning, like the very foundation of the journey. Because I was not an active kid. Like, I didn't really do sports as a kid. I mean, my mom enrolled us in like swimming and gymnastics, but it wasn't like real swimming and real gymnastics. And that's when we were like really young. But no, for the most part, we were just very, when I say we, I say my sisters and I, we're pretty sedentary. We were actually pretty like, I don't want to say overweight, but kind of like borderline overweight when we were kids. Yeah. But when I was, and people will look at me now and they'll be like, no, I don't believe you, until I show them a picture. And then they're like, that's not you. Literally, they'll tell me, that's not you. And I'm like, no, it's me. I don't just have a random picture of a 10-year-old girl on my phone. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So
really?
Yeah, I it's been quite a transformation. I can show you some pictures another time. But so I started working out more seriously when I was 13, because ironically, what got me started was an actual eating disorder. So I was anorexic, well, developed anorexia when I was 13. And yes, a very young age. Which isn't all that uncommon nowadays, but it was ultimately driven by this, really this desire to have a flat stomach, to have abs. As
so you as a 13-year-old little girl with two older sisters, you said you never worked out. I mean, of course you did PE in school, which you all did.
I was awesome at capture the flag, let me just tell you that.
what was it like on a normal evening at your home, or like a normal weekend eating wise at your home?
Let's see. So let me just give you a little bit of the rundown. All right. My mom didn't cook much. Our house kind of like rotated between like frozen convenience meals and like pick up pizza, like $5 pizza from Little Caesars or McDonald's, which we absolutely loved, you know, we'd always go, oh, the golden arches, Ma, can we please, I promise I'll eat my broccoli if we, so and on the weekends, we would go out as a family, probably like Pizza Hut, Chili's, a Chinese buffet.
This is in New York, correct?
No. This is in Florida. This is Florida because I wasn't born in New York. I've only lived in Florida.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is
normal that you knew at the time, you and your sisters.
That really was the norm. And it was interesting because I had friends, this is like when I was in elementary school, I had friends who would love coming over to our house because we had sweets and like junk food, end quote, because their parents didn't allow it. They didn't allow soda. They didn't allow sugar. And I'm like, it was like beyond my comprehension at that age because I literally always had like a can of soda in my hand. Like it was pretty bad.
So do you attribute that to like just being a normal family or was it something that, you know, had been transferred from generation to generation from like your mom, your mom's family was like that, your dad, your dad's family was like that, or was just the, was it like the easiest thing to do?
I think it was, a lot of it was convenience, but like nowadays I'll joke with my mom, I'll give her shit for it, but it's always lighthearted. It's all a joke because I'll make some sort of passing comment about like something that we used to eat and it's laughable now, but she would come into the defense of like, well, that's what grandma fed us. Like, that's why we grew up. And I guess it is more of like a generational thing. And which is all the more reason to instill healthy habits. Like when you have the education and you have that knowledge, like implement it and pass it down. So
at 13, you decided to, you started with the eating disorder, with the anorexia because
here's how it really started. It wasn't like an intentionally, I'm going to eat less to lose weight, right? So we're going to bring it really back to like really ignorance, an innocent ignorance. So it started very innocently as, you know, when you like, let's say you like go and you have a big meal, right? Big salad, big burger, whatever. You have, the food is in your stomach. It's not digested yet. So you have a food baby, like you're a little bloated, right? So what I didn't register as a kid, and it started younger. So 13 is when it got into the eating disorder, but it was a snowball effect from when I was 11 and 12. So I started to eat less and less because I noticed like the less I put into my body, the flatter my stomach was. And it sounds so simple and it sounds so honestly quite stupid, but I didn't know any better. And so when I first started eating less, it was actually when I was 11. And let me just give you a little bit of I'm going to paint a picture for you. I would wake up in the morning and I either wouldn't have breakfast or I'd have like one little mini, like a mini muffin, just a tiny little mini muffin. Or Special K cereal, because we all know the Special K diet is have two bowls of Special K and a sensible dinner.
Right.
Yeah, that was, yeah. So I would have a Special K in the morning or nothing at all, or that little mini muffin.
When you were 13, that was your go-to meal in the morning. Was it something that your sisters did too?
No, this was actually just me. My sisters, again, I'm showing really the eating habits of my family. One of my sisters would have Publix chocolate chip cookies, three of them on a plate warmed up in the microwave. She'd take a spoon and she'd like take a piece of the cookie and like kind of dip it in milk. And then
that sounds so good.
I know, Publix cookies. And if you're not in Florida, you don't understand. Like Publix is the OG.
Kid, that really messes up your mind when you're trying to grow. And then not only that, you were starting middle school at the time, right? Rough times.
Yes. So you're right. It was sixth grade. I was 11. And it got to the point where I was like, you know, having like no breakfast. For lunch, I'd have it was called La Creme, some yogurt, like one little 6 ounce thing of yogurt and a diet soda, or rolled up turkey slices and an apple and a diet soda, because the diet soda would like the carbonation would fill me up. And again, at this time, I had no concept of calories. Like, this was all just, oh, like, I don't feel hunger. And now my stomach looks flatter. And so it just kind of spiraled until one day I was just walking. Honestly, I remember it very vividly. I was just walking in my kitchen and I just remember everything going like gray and spotty and then just black. And I actually passed out in my kitchen. I was 11 and my dad actually caught me. And I just remember waking up on the couch.
Something interesting without something really creepy. I had the same exact experience.
Really? Tell me.
I will tell you. I'm very interested in what happened. I'll tell you exactly that. That exactly happened to me one morning. It was before going to school. I was in elementary. And I remember I was 12. Yeah, I was 12 and I was so weak that I just fainted. And it was in the kitchen too. And it was on top of the dog. And the dog the dog was like whimpering and just, you know, scared. And it was like, what's going on? And I was on the floor and they took me to the couch and they were like, what happened? Did you eat today? And all these questions and everybody was on top of me. I can totally remember that. I can see it in my head. And my dad was completely in shock. He didn't know what was going on. Like, and then what happened next? I'll tell you, but I'm interested in knowing where your situation went from.
It's interesting how this stuff happens. Like, and you, like you said, your dad was in shock. Like, my parents didn't pick up on this kind of stuff, right? But I woke up on the couch and I remember them telling me, they gave me Gatorade. It was low blood sugar. And then I remember we had these like frozen chicken sandwiches. They just made me a chicken sandwich. And again, I had no concept of calories. So it's not like, oh, I don't want to eat the chicken sandwich. Like, blah, like the eating disorder had not developed at this point. This was just the very beginning. Because what ended up happening, that was sixth grade. So in seventh grade, I really made a commitment, I say in quotes, to try to be healthier. And again, zero, absolutely no concept of what is healthy. My version of healthy was not letting my mom pack my lunch, because she would pack, of course, Publix cookies and like chicken sandwiches with mayo and ketchup on an onion bun with like chips and two things of OJ and fruit roll-ups, all of these things. So my version of healthy, like get this, I would make a sandwich, but then I'd have like, those yogurt Cheerios, like they have like the berry yogurt Cheerios. I thought that was healthy because it was like whatever yogurt berry and sugar-free white chocolate macadamia nut cookies. And they're healthy, right? Because they're sugar-free. So they must be healthy. I'm being super sarcastic, everyone. I'm sorry?
That's what you packed in Noah's day.
Yeah, well, yes. It wasn't eating less at that point. It was, I'm going to try to change my food choices. I do remember now. It is all coming back to me. So it was that summer after seventh grade, before eighth grade, we have a pool party, right? At Adventure Island.
Okay.
This is like a big thing. And again, I wanted abs. I wanted a flat stomach. So that summer after seventh grade, after I tried to shift my food choices, then it became eating less. And that's where things really started to spiral out of control. And so I showed up at my eighth grade pool party with abs. However, the rest of my body was completely emaciated and malnourished. And I would get looks from people and I didn't understand what they were looking at. I thought they were just, miring my abs or something, because I literally had a six pack, but it was no muscle. It was just because I just had zero fat. Uh-huh. And it was bad. Like, I look back at pictures now and...
Did they tell you anything at that time?
Nobody really told me anything at that time. And I think I want to say, I don't want to like make this up as a memory, but I want to say that my parents would look at me and say like, you're getting too thin, but nobody really,
what's going on.
nobody asked me what was going on. And it was very strange. So eventually they caught on, eventually. But they really, they didn't go about it the right way in handling it, because I think they were just scared.
So did they confront you and say, hey, you need to start eating again, this is too much? Or how did it happen?
They pretty much just started telling me that I needed to eat more, that I needed to gain weight. And somebody who is starts to fall into that disordered mindset, because I guess the intention to eat less and the intention to withhold food and spiraling into the mindset of an eating disorder, because there's a difference between disordered eating and eating disorder. So it started as disordered eating, but when your body is malnourished and your brain is malnourished, you start to develop that characteristic, typical, like eating disorder frame of mind.
It's kind of like a pattern that you start following.
Yes, yes.
All it is, you have built a bad routine. A bad routine, just like you can build up a great healthy routine and, you know, consume what you're supposed to consume every day. Mm-hmm. You can also do that the most terrible way. And I can't imagine you as a little kid trying to figure it out on your own. You know, I identify with that, but yours was more inclining to not eating, right? Due to mm-hmm. anorexia. Well, mine was the opposite. Mine was and I'll tell you why, because I want to continue flowing in the podcast. I want to share more with our listeners about you and your experience, and I have some really awesome, really great questions.
He's giving me spirit fingers right now for anybody who can't see us, which is all of you.
when I was young, I grew up in Nicaragua, you know, middle class, middle low class. Mom was a teacher. I used to be in a private school where she was teaching Spanish and linguistics. And I'm the youngest with my brother and I. It's only two of us in my mom and dad relationship. And when I went into private school for elementary, and then when I transitioned to middle school, to another school, I went to a public school. Mm-hmm. That was the trigger for me. On top of that, you know, I had the kind of parents that I had to be doing stuff all the time, because my mom is a teacher. So she's the structured kind. My dad was working. He was the provider. My mom also worked, but my mom was the creative but structured, and my dad was the brains and the nurturer. So it was kind of like difficult for me to kind of meet expectations, because, like, for example, I at 11 years old, I'm going to elementary school. I hated my public school. Okay, you have to imagine, from a private school, all cherished and nice.
I understand.
To a public school where kids are just rambunctious and just, I couldn't fit easily. Mm-hmm. And not only that, I was studying piano. I was going to an academy to learn English. My school was not bilingual. And I started learning English. And this is all between 11 and 13 years old. So the pressure was unreal on me. So there comes this kid. And I was in a dance team. I had joined the dance team in my school. Hmm. Before that, I joined the a club where we were just singing. We were doing like an art club where we were singing. So I was in charge of that. I feel like the pressure was I wasn't too many things too much of the time, but I wanted to fit the part and I wanted to look the part. And what I started doing was the same thing. I started starving myself. I didn't have time. They didn't ask me either. So with the fainting, I think I had like low blood pressure, low sugar. I don't know what the heck it was, because I remember my mom was always busy. I was always busy. My dad was always out. My brother was always out. Nobody was home. Nobody was cooking. Nobody cared. And I could grab, like, you know, for breakfast, I would grab like a little piece of bread with a little bit of, you know, scrambled eggs, if anything. Or I would just go to school and not have anything. and then have like a ridiculous burger in the afternoon and then come home and then just overeat. And then the opposite happened to me to anorexia. I was eating a lot at one time, but I felt so bad because I didn't eat earlier and I didn't have the time. But I was like, oh my God, I'm feeling so sick. So I was puking it out. So it started becoming bulimia.
So I have a question for you. Did it start, now the overeating was driven by excessive hunger from not eating earlier, right?
Well, not only that, but my mom was always peer pressure. Because remember, I was in a dance team.
Yeah.
So that to me was super important, and it was important to her. And, you know, we used to have shows at the local theater, and you had to look the part. And then on top of that, I was going to school, I was teaching English, I was learning piano. And it was almost too overwhelming that I tried to fix it, but my stomach didn't like it.
Isn't it interesting how our behaviors like that, like we cope with behaviors that almost like are a physical representation of what we're feeling. So it's like you're feeling pressured and overwhelmed, and it's like all of this stuff coming in. And so it's like ingesting all of this food, it reflects like all of this pressure that you're bearing, like coming inside of you and holding inside of you, that to a point where you just can't hold it anymore. And then you just have to quite literally purge it from your body. And
yeah, but my routine was systematic, right? So I would go to school in the morning, I would learn some piano in the afternoon, I would go to dance the weekends, and I don't even remember what else I was doing. So I had a structure routine that eating was just part of the routine, but I didn't have enough time for the digestion. So it's like, oh, whatever, you can't digest fast enough. So let me get you out of my system. Kind of like another task. It was really bad. And there's so much more to it. And I really want to talk about this more, because I know it will help a lot of women out there, a lot of fitness, you know, beginners, and even, you know, people that aren't, you are a dietitian.
Let me make something clear. I'm not a dietitian. So a dietitian would go through the curriculum, and then you do a 1 year long dietetic internship. And then makes you eligible to sit for the board exam to become a registered dietitian. Okay. I just want to make sure that your listeners and anybody else knows that. So, cause I want to give credit where credit is due. Being a registered dietitian is different. It's different from what I'm doing, but I personally don't want to pursue the path of being a registered dietitian, because it is not what so when I was going through the curriculum, I realized it's not what I really truly wanted. Because you think, okay, you hear like, oh, dietetics, dietitian, oh, make me a meal plan. But really a huge component of dietetics, probably the majority of it, mm-hmm. is not having a private practice. And it is in some aspects.
Yes, you're right.
And that's what I wanted. That's really what I wanted. And technically I could, but when I was going through school, the most they ever talked about as far as private practice was, it becomes more like managing a business and you never really end up practicing. I kid you not. That's all they said. They were like steering us away from it. And they did a good job. I mean, but ultimately full circle right back.
Right. Of course. So yeah, like, I wanna, so when you started your fitness journey, remembering that path that you had when you were a child, right? Mm-hmm. And how you wanted to inspire others the right way with the information, with the knowledge that is out there. So right now, how is your life 5 years ago versus today?
5 years ago. So we're doing a big jump in time. So 5 years ago, when was that? What, 2016, right. I was still at University of Florida. So I actually took 6 years for my undergrad because I was one on a reduced course load, meaning I did 12 straight semesters, but it like fall, spring, summer. I literally took one semester off and I didn't know what to do with myself. But it was a six-year process. 2016, I was in school, still doing my curriculum, but still teaching fitness classes. But I feel like I was a completely different person than I am now. Not 100% different, but man, I thought that when I was in college, mm-hmm. I thought that I knew myself. I thought that I had done all the growing that needed to be done. Like, I thought I had matured to the point that I was going to mature. Mm-hmm. But I look back now and I'm like, in 5 years, back then I wouldn't even recognize the person I am now. It's just, I'm just so different. So
the major change had been going from school to now where you are, which you know what you want to do out in life, right?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
So your change was that 5 years ago you didn't know what you wanted to do, and now you are in a position where you're like, okay, this is where I want to go. This is really my passion. This is where I...
So to be completely honest, 5 years ago, I was on the track for PA school, actually. So I know I'm jumping from dietetics to PA and coaching. So here's really what the progression was. Okay. I went to UF because I knew they had a dietetics program. My eating disorder, after kind of emerging from that a little bit, and then I relapsed in college my first year, but emerging from it, like I knew I wanted to go into college to be an RD, to have a private practice, to specialize in eating disorders, to help people who were like me.
Yeah.
That was the plan, right?
I wanted to do that so bad.
Right.
You feel it in your skin when you know what it feels like. You
have yeah.
those memories and you're like, I don't want anybody ever to feel like this, especially a little girl that yeah. don't know any better. Heck, a little girl that's just developing doesn't even have like, you know, boobs and appearance. It's difficult. And I have two daughters, as you know, if you didn't know.
I didn't know that, actually.
I have a 4-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old daughter now.
Wow.
So you can imagine that my passion for fitness has changed my perspective in my nutrition. The nutrition part is delicate topics for me because I don't ever want my daughters to feel that way.
Absolutely.
And then on top of that, add, you know, behavior patterns and add the cultural path that you have to go through because your family does this, then you're supposed to do this because you're supposed to be this way, or with both sides of the spectrum, right?
I know this all so well. I mean,
just interesting because 5 years ago I had a newborn baby.
Wow.
She was born in 2016, so it wasn't something that I had planned or anything, but you know.
I mean, I feel it's so interesting to like look at lives of individuals and be like, we were in completely different places. You had a newborn baby and I honestly felt like I was a baby. I felt like I was a baby.
So let me ask you right now, how did you start your business?
So that kind of ties back into the whole, I was going to be a dietitian, and then I was going to be a PA, and then I'm not. So I did finish through my dietetics coursework. I did get my degree in dietetics. I just did not go on to do the internship that would make me eligible to take the boards. Now, I did this intentionally because dietetics really largely at that time was very clinical. So like working in hospital tube feeds, it was community, like working for WIC or the school lunch service system or the food service management system. I'm like, not for me. So at the time, this was also after my accident that I had gone through, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I was very much around the medical setting, and my sister was going to PA school at the time. My dad's a doctor, like all of these things,
pressure,
you know,
pressure.
It was pressure, but it was subconscious pressure because, okay, if you're not familiar with Indian culture, you're either a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure.
Oh, I've heard all about it.
So
all about it. And I used to spend a lot of time with a friend in one of the states that I used to live. And we used to hang out so much. She used to cook. She used to invite me on the different celebrations. She used to like put the
Bindi. Yep.
I used to dress up with her dresses.
Wow.
We used to learn together her culture. And I used to teach her the Latino culture. So I kind of know a little bit. I don't talk to her that often anymore, but it's very special. It's very special to me. But yes, I know the pressure. You're a nuclear engineer or something complicated that is making the family proud.
Yes. Their parents live their success through their kids anyway. So I, being in the medical setting, having gone through the accident and whatnot, like I had some pretty phenomenal surgeons. And the thing is, a lot of the times we'll go to the doctor and sometimes we feel like a number on the agenda. Like it's just in and out, in and out. We don't really spend time with the doctor because they have so many patients to get through. There's no person, in general, there's no personal connection. But with these surgeons, like they made me feel like I matter. They made I kid you not. So the surgeon who was going to operate on my hand and my wrist and all of that, he went to my dad and he's like, Dr. Dylan, I'm going to treat your daughter like she's my daughter. And stuff like that just stuck with me because this man was like above and beyond any doctor that I have ever interacted with. And it inspired me because I wanted somebody to feel that same way. And
not particularly as a doctor.
Here's where that comes in. So not as a doctor, but as a PA, because on paper, it made so much sense. It made perfect sense. As a PA, you can work under the doctor so that you don't have all the liability, but you still have a lot of financial stability. You have field flexibility, so you can change specialties. You have the option to work part-time if you want to pursue other passions on the side. Like, and I love anatomy and physiology and the human body, and I want to help people. I'm doing that in quotes because everybody says, I want to help people. But I did. And all of these things made sense on paper. And then as I approached graduation at UF, people would be like, oh, Amita, what are you doing after graduation? I'm like, oh, I'm going to go home and I'm going to work to get my patient contact hours because you have to do a certain number of hours when you apply to PA school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to get my hours and then I'm going to apply to PA school. And that's the plan. But as I was saying it, I was like, oh shit, I actually have to do this now. Cause it was a very rehearsed response for me. And then when I was actually back home getting these hours, this is ultimately why I chose coaching. Okay. So how I segue into coaching, because I would be going to these shadowing doctors and PAs and working as like doing like medical assistant work, taking down, you know, medications, checking medications, making sure everything is the same or if what's changed. Mm-hmm. And these patients would come in with these bags, right? These bags of pill bottles, like this is what I'm taking. And they didn't even know what they were taking. All right. And then there would be the doctor or the PA comes in and they'd be like, okay, how's this working for you? How's this med working for you? How's this medication working for you? Okay, so we're going to take you off of that one, but we're going to give you this one. But then we're also going to give you this one to manage the side effects of that one. And I was just like, well, because not once did they ever mention anything from a preventative approach of nutrition, diet, lifestyle, exercise, nothing. The most I ever heard them say was,
exercise more. You should do this.
More. What's more? Eat less salt. You know what I mean? Like, it was.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
And honestly, so this was actually particularly a cardiologist. It was one of the ones I was shadowing, and this is where it kind of just I realized I was like, They had 42 patients on the agenda that day. It was in and out, in and out. They might be helping them in the short term by managing their symptoms, right? Our conventional medical model is very much treating problems as far as like treating a symptom of a specific area instead of rooting back to a cause.
Exactly. It's,
and the whole
it's almost like a little patch. It's almost like a little band-aid.
It's a band-aid on a bullet wound.
Exactly.
It's a treat-em and street-em. It's it's in and out. It's helping, if you want to call helping managing symptoms. But what I wanted to do was have an impact on people's life. I didn't just want to help them. I wanted to have an impact.
That's a really key word, having an impact.
I wanted a relationship with this person. Like, I wanted to see it through, you know? And yes, you can argue that, like,
your clients, you want to have babies. We want to have fitness babies from the beginning.
Fitness babies. I don't know about babies, but I'm not having any. I know you have your kids, but I'm not having babies anytime soon, my dear.
Sounds like, okay, let me bring you closer to me. I'm going to teach you your ways, and then off you go.
I want to educate them, but I want to work with them. I don't want to talk at them. I don't want to throw pharmaceuticals at them. And don't get me wrong, there is absolutely a time and a place for a pharmaceutical intervention, but I don't believe it should be the first line of defense, and which is why the medical model did not align with me and how I ultimately kind of migrated away from it. But there was so much like cognitive dissonance because I was going through the actions and going to these offices every day, kind of quite honestly hating my life doing it, and not telling my dad that this is not what I want to do. And I didn't allow myself to believe that I could do anything else.
Because you did not want to disappoint, and that's where the culture.
Well, I didn't want to rock the boat, but I also didn't want the boat to capsize, because if I did, he'd capsize that shit on my ass. So like,
that's a good way to put it. Okay. So you can see my struggle now, how I didn't want to disappoint anybody. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to what you want to do in your life, the biggest influence is from our parents, grandparents, our family members, because that's your nucleus. That's where you come from, right?
I see that now, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you a few more questions, and you can expand as much as you want, or you can make it a simple answer. Because I want to know more about you, and I am dying to share this with the listeners as well. So I want to make sure to ask you, what makes you proud of yourself in a simple statement?
In one simple statement? So it has to be simple? Can't be a run-on sentence? Oh, okay. What makes me proud of myself? This is a really interesting question, because nobody has ever asked me that question. And I'm usually the one asking people hard questions.
Yay.
Honestly, I'm proud of myself for really sticking through everything that I've been through and becoming the person I am today, and following through with what my heart, my mind, my intuition, my passion, my purpose. I feel this intuition. I know what my purpose is. I've found it. I'm following through with it. It's not crystal clear yet, but I'm on the right path. And I am so proud of myself for following through with it, despite what my dad, my father, my parents, my sisters, my family, despite what they say, what they tell me.
That's really important.
I mean, I'm so proud of the person I have become, and knowing that and trusting that intuition, because my entire life, everything was dictated by my dad. I wasn't allowed to make my own decisions, really. I wasn't allowed to make mistakes.
Same. I have an episode. It's an episode that's going to be on the Bright and Fit podcast. So you guys, make sure you listen to it. And it is correlating how our parents and grandparents influence who we become in life. You have to listen to it.
I definitely.
In what you're saying. Now, have you been to other countries?
I have. I've been to Canada. I've been to, if that counts, I've been to Canada. I've been to India, actually. I went to India. When I was 10, my dad took us to India. It was quite an experience. And let me just sum it up by saying I was way too young to appreciate it.
Yeah. Did you have to cover and everything?
No. So, my dad is Sikh, and the only time we had to cover was in the temple. If we ever, like, that's anywhere though, any temple. I don't practice religion really. I'm more spiritual than religious, but it was definitely an experience.
Canada, India.
I don't know if this counts, but I've been to Ukraine in an airport for like an hour.
Wow. I was going to relay that question in like, is fitness different in different countries? Because different fitness is different. I've been to several countries and I've noticed how the difference in dynamics is in different countries. So you being from a like a mixed culture, you know, it's almost.
I will say something though. Let me give you my perspective. Like I'll give you a little bit of perspective coming from that mixed culture. All right. My mom is obsessed with sports. She's American. She's white as you can be, Scottish and Swedish, right?
Oh, wow.
She grew up playing sports. She got a volleyball scholarship to college. Like she's obsessed with sports. My dad, on the other hand, literally will say sports are a waste of time. And you know what? You know what? I know I see your face, but this is evident, Tati, this is evident by when you are watching the Olympics and they're doing the march in. Do you know how many athletes you see for India? Do you know how? Exactly. Exactly.
Basically, doctors.
You're too busy being doctors, right? Right. So.
I wanted to ask you, what is your greatest fear and how have you managed your fear?
My greatest fear. Wow, you put me on the spot with these questions. I had no time to prepare this.
I love asking my guests these questions because I feel like we have so much to share that everybody up there can learn from. My fear is to not leave a legacy of children that they can say they're proud of and not necessarily in the materialistic part, but in touching lives. Because you mentioned this, you said, I want to impact lives. Mm-hmm. And that is my biggest fear, not be able to follow my dreams and pursue my passions, which I gotta say, I'm so proud of you. Because if I had known now what I didn't know before when I was young, I would go with it. When we say, like we say in Latino countries, you go with it con pata y con mano y con cabeza. You go with your full self, with your whole body. You go head on it. You jump, you know, head on it. If you really know what your passion and you nurture it and you just, the sky's the limit. So.
Or if your name is Amita, your name means limitless. So.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Not even there you go.
What is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, wow. Honestly, I've been through some bad physical harm, so physical harm is not my concern. My biggest fear is allowing myself to become complacent.
Oof, that's tough.
It's not fulfilling the purpose and. Again, that word comes back and it sounds kind of woo-woo and cliche and cheesy, but like that word impact comes back. It's not having the impact that I really set out to have. It's look, my goal in life is one of my goals in life and has been for probably 6 years or maybe 6 years now,
yeah.
Almost seven, is to give a TED talk someday. So.
And I'll be there.
Yeah, you'll be there, front row, front and center.
Coffee's together.
So, but yeah, it's becoming complacent and not allowing myself to live up. And honestly, it's not that anybody else would get in my way. It's me allowing myself to get complacent. It's me getting in my own way. That is my biggest fear because I know myself. And sometimes self-awareness and being able to observe your own thoughts and observe your own consciousness, like it's a blessing, but sometimes it's a curse because I can really, when you say overthink, like overthink is an understatement. Like I'm talking.
Yeah. So now let me into that because we mentioned what you're most proud of and what your biggest fear is. So who are three people that have been your biggest influencers in who you are besides your surgeons, which I really want to have the opportunity to add what happened with your accident in a nutshell for listeners to to kind of like see what you're going through and who you are and why you are resilient like this and how you're passionate about life the way you are. But who can you say that are your three biggest influences? People, topics out there.
Not my surgeons. So those were just a deciding factor in, because I've always wanted to have an impact on people's lives. They just kind of shuttled me towards medicine, but then I shuttled myself away from it later. The biggest impact, one, my dad. My father has been probably the biggest impact on my life, and in both positive and not so positive ways. But that is a whole can of worms that I won't get into right now. But my dad, for number one. My friends that I, very, very select friends, very close friends that I made probably in the latter half of my college experience, who were really, really there for me after my accident. And we connected on a whole different level. The kind of friends who will call you out on your shit and from a place of love. They'll do it pretty bluntly, but they know that it's ultimately to better you. And it's a humbling experience. And you really, you feel that ego inside of you kind of like bubble up a bit, and you have to keep it down. Like, so friends, my dad, wow. I can't think of a third one. I mean, I'd say my mom and my sister is really my family.
Yeah.
Because my mom is kind of the opposite of my dad. He's very stern, very assertive, very aggressive and forthright. And my mom is very nurturing, very beta, not very alpha, very, she'll do anything for anyone. She is completely selfless. And then there goes my sisters. I kind of lump them into the last person is my family. So like my sisters have been there for me. We started off as always fighting, even getting into physical fights sometimes, but they're my best friends now. So they really influenced me.
Awesome. Now, I know that this is part of one of the biggest challenges, not precisely the biggest challenge, but what has been your biggest challenge and how do you overcome it?
Biggest challenge when? Because there's been a lot.
Biggest so far.
Oh, wow.
I've been able to overcome. Because first, share your experience with it. How it happened, how do you feel, how long did it take you to recover, and how it transformed you?
So I wish we had more time for this because
I know, right?
It we'll have to also do this. We'll have to extend this at some point because like a part two, because there's, I don't know if I could put it in a nutshell. What I can say about it is that before my accident, I thought my eating disorder and, you know, which I wouldn't wish upon anyone because you don't understand it until you experience it. The voices in your head, it's not like a crazy voices in your head. It's like a, it doesn't leave you alone until you do what it's telling you to do kind of voice. And before my accident, I thought my eating disorder was the hardest thing I'd ever have to do. And I distinctly remember when I was in physical rehab thinking, I thought my eating disorder was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through, but this is hands down the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. And it was honestly coming from a place of feeling completely powerless, feeling completely defeated, uncertain what your future is, feeling defeated in that, like, you could put so much work into something for so many years, in this case, fitness and all of that. Cause I was into fitness before. I was an instructor still. I was lifting in the gym, like, and then something takes you from 100 to zero and knocks you down and into a bed, completely bedridden and immobile, like feeling so defeated because you have no control, you have no power over it. Okay. And it teaches you to accept. It teaches you to accept circumstances. It teaches you to accept your life where you're at. And I've said this before, and I say this to a lot when, especially my clients, when I'm trying to deliver, like try to convey a point to them about acceptance. It's like, there's two different types of acceptance. There's the passive acceptance where you kind of just throw your hands up in the air, like whatever, I accept it. I can't do anything about it. Whatever, like fine, do it, whatever. And there's the active acceptance where you actually lean into something and you're like, I'm choosing to accept this. I'm choosing to lean into it because
to feel the feeling, but not live in the feeling.
Right. Validate the feeling, feel the feeling. Don't saturate in the feeling. Don't marinate. Exactly. If you marinate in it, you're just, it becomes you, you become that toxic negative feeling.
And then it becomes a relationship of negativity and toxicity.
And that's all you bring into your life. And that's the filter. Honestly, it casts a filter over, like through which you see life. Like you see it according to that.
You see it through like a little.
A different lens.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it was mentally and physically the hardest thing to get through because progress is slow. And you think like, if anybody here is trying to like get fit or lose weight or anything like that, like you think progress is slow, like physical rehabilitation is a slow process.
Yes. I have so many other questions and so much to talk about and running out of time.
I guess we're gonna have to do a part two.
We have to do a part two. On the next part, we're gonna add so much more and more details on what we talked about today, because I feel like, yeah, it does deserve a part two, girl. Let me end up with this question, because I feel like everything's so important, right? But we have covered so many pointers that I know for a fact it's going to help people out there, whether you're male, female, young, old, starting, you're the best of the best, you are like an executive or whatever. What will be tips and or advice that you will give the listeners who would like to start their fitness journey the right way?
And we're talking about starting from like ground zero.
Or any reset or relapse.
I would say there's step one and a step 1A, okay? Or step 1A and step 1B, rather. Step 1A, really understand why you are starting this journey. Be really honest with yourself. Why do you want to get fit? Why do you want to lose weight? Why do you want to X, Y, or Z? Like, what is your actual purpose? And the generic response is usually confidence or I want to look good. Like, but like, what's beneath that? Like, what is driving that need for, is it validation? Do you feel like you need to be externally validated? Or when people say, I just want to like the way I look in the mirror. It's like, but what is it about you that you like, what parts of you are you not like in sync with? Are you not aligned with? Are you not liking about yourself that you feel like this is going to make you like yourself more? Does that make sense?
Find your why. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's 1A. And then step 1B would be find a knowledgeable coach, not just TikTok, Instagram, all of that garbage, whatever. And I'm not saying it's all garbage because it's not all garbage, but
Trustworthy resources.
Find a trustworthy resource. Do your research. Okay. Don't follow someone on TikTok and think that, oh, like they look good or they seem like they know what they're talking about. Or my favorite, they have a big following. Or, so they must be legit.
Or my cousin's best friend's neighbor did this diet and I'm going to.
She was on keto and she lost 20 pounds. So I'm going to try keto and I'm going to lose 20 pounds and then gain 10 back. And you know what I'm saying? So. To sum that up, 1A, understand why. And if you can't find that, if you can't, like, if it's not on the top of your head, which it won't be, and it shouldn't be, because this is going to require some digging and introspection, just keep peeling back the layers. So I want to look good. Okay, why? Because that'll make me feel confident. Why? Because you just keep peeling, just keep asking why, kind of like a little kid. I was like, why is the sky blue? Because it is. But why? Or what? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. So find your why, find trustworthy resources.
Oh, wait, I thought you said one step, right? Oh, how many steps are we going?
Whatever tips and advice that you want to give.
So definitely, well, in that case, yes. Understand why, understand yourself. That kind of goes into more of that. Yeah, understand yourself. Understand that, like, set realistic expectations, okay? Absolutely realistic expectations, because if you're going in super motivated and you're going to go like gung-ho, if you're going from not working out at all to kind of go to the gym 5 days a week, even first week, you're going to be like, yeah, I feel awesome. The next week, you're going to be like, I'm done. Like, you're going to burn yourself out. Have realistic expectations.
Pace your pace. Absolutely.
Exactly. And be okay if you need to take the pace slower. Understand, this is the long game. Like, this is not a sprint to the finish line. There is no finish. Let me tell you right now, there is no finish line, because even if you get super shredded, you have abs, trust me, been there, doesn't mean you're going to be happy. I almost guarantee that when you get to that point, if and when you get to that point where you are like stage ready, photo shoot ready, there your focus is going to shift from getting there to staying there.
Right.
And you're just going to be chasing this carrot, this moving goalpost. Like,
yeah.
So really get super clear on your expectations and understand, like, in X amount of months or years, when I reach that point, how is my life going to be different? How is my everyday going to be different?
What's your motivation? Like, what your north is telling you, where you want to go. I know you
have that
boundaries. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go one more. Cause we do have to jump off. But definitely part two, but one more would be, don't rely on motivation. And I know that sounds cliche, but motivation is so fleeting. It comes and it goes. What stays is discipline. What stays is commitment. And those always link back to that reason why you started. I hate saying find your why or know your why, because it sounds overused, overdone, cliche, but truly, like, what gets you started isn't what's going to keep you going, right?
Absolutely. 100%. Because it may change along the way. Oh, now I'm feeling this way. Now I want to do this way. Or you become complacent. Like you said, oh, I'm looking good. This is where I stop, because there's nothing better than this look. And there's always more. And then that's when you lose your momentum. That's when you go back down and relapse and have to restart.
I mean, that's what I see a lot in individuals with clients in the past. Like, they'll make a milestone, they'll lose X amount of weight, or they'll reach some sort of milestone, and then they'll like kind of coast, and they're like, I have been doing fine. Like, let me just indulge in this, that, or the other. And then what happens? The actions that you took to get you there, you have to keep taking those actions. Those actions might look a little bit different along the way, but if you don't keep taking action, if you don't keep taking forward action, mm-hmm. you're gonna fall back.
Absolutely.
Or become complacent. Difference between being content and complacent.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you so much for being in this podcast.
Oh, it was so much fun. I love it.
One more question before we share social media. Is there something you would like to know about me?
There's a lot I want to know about you. I mean, I just found out that you have two kids. That's kind of a big deal. Something I want to know about you. What? Let me think of some hard question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask something more. Okay. More generic, okay? What is your biggest driver in the world?
My biggest driver in the world?
What gets you to move or take action?
My children.
Okay.
That's my legacy. I have two lives. And there's no perfect parents, as you know. Your parents are the biggest influencers. There's no perfect parents. My parents were not perfect. my dad was far from perfect. Rest in peace, daddy. And I will always say that he's my biggest motivator, and he did his part in my life. My mom did her part in my life. My sister and my siblings have, my friends have. But at the end of the day, I know that my children are going to pass the legacy that I live behind, or my friends are going to pass the legacy that I live behind by impacting their lives. So my biggest driver in life right now is my children, because they're small, but ultimately my legacy. And that's why I want to wake up every morning and say, oh, I did this. Oh, I did that. Even starting this podcast, which was terrifying by
the way. Oh, I'm sure.
And, you know, building my brand. I have a regular job. I have children. I have fitness classes to teach. My biggest driver in life is to know that there's a biggest purpose in life. And if I can, you know, inspire others to follow their dreams by doing what passions me, I'm going to do that. Whether I fail or not, whether I feel like I did so much and I get to interview, I don't know, Beyonce. Beyonce, or I interview Tony Robbins, or I interview some celebrity out there. If it goes to whatever level it's gonna get, I just want to leave a legacy and follow the example and say, hey, my mom, she did this, she did this, she did this. Why? Because she thought it was a good idea and she followed her passion. And I think you're on the right path to do that, because you found it earlier in life. And not that I regret that, but I think it's really important. I think it's really important to keep digging, because you're going to get more passions and you're going to realize that whoever you were 5 years ago, 10 years ago is nowhere near who you are next year and the following year, 10 years from now. So, you know, and how would you like to be remembered is more important than what you did for yourself. Mostly people don't realize that. People talk about how you were with other people when you passed away, and not who you were as a person. That matters.
The journey of self-discovery is an endless one. It does not end.
Just like your name, Limitless.
Wow, full circle with that mic drop. Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Follow us on Facebook. I'm on Facebook at Bride and Fit by Tatiana, and on Instagram, Bride and Fit One. And Amita, you are coached.by.amita on Instagram.
And on Facebook. And on Facebook, I am at Coached by Amita, all together. And then, yes, like Tati said, on Instagram, at Coached by Amita, but Coached is separated by coach.by.amita.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. I hope you can join us in the next episode. So much love and positive vibes sent to you, and talk to you and see you next time. Bye. All right.